Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Redemption Hill podcast. We are a community of people learning the way of Jesus to bless our city of Boise, Idaho, and beyond. Redemption Hill is a unique place. We are a collective of micro churches that do life together throughout the week and gather on Sundays to grow, worship, and celebrate what God is doing in our city. You are invited to join us Sundays at 9 a.m. at Discovery Church in Boise, where you can find the community you need in any season of your life. More details can be found at redemptionboise.org. Up next is the teaching segment from this week's Sunday gathering. Afterwards, stay tuned for more information on how to get connected at Redemption Hill.
So, a little bit of family history. My dad's dad, who I called my papa, was a bit of a wild Appalachian moonshining kind of guy. That's part of my heritage. He grew up in the mountains outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, and he was what one might describe as lawless. He was a bit of a wild character. He was the kind of person who might ask that if you wanted someone dead to kill that person for you. That he literally tells stories. He told a story once of someone offering him money to kill someone. Thankfully, I was told that he turned it down. That's the version of the story that I know. But that's the kind of like general vibe and energy that he put out, okay? And so it just happened that at one point, my grandfather, my papa, he and some buddies as a young man had a plan to rob a convenience store. As the story's been told through the years, at some point it like elevated to a bank, but I can confirm it was a convenience store. And they had this plan, they had the weapons ready, they were ready to go do their thing, and he was just waiting at home. It was like 24 to 48 hours before this was going to happen. And it just so happened that this fella, I don't even know his name, I don't know his last name, but he went by the name of Tiny in this tiny little Appalachian town, called him Tiny. And Tiny was a church-going, God-fearing man. He showed up one Monday night to church visitation, which is like this thing that you do in the South where you go like visit people from the church, check in on how they're doing, or maybe you like knock on some doors and tell people about Jesus. He showed up for church visitation, but he was late and everyone was gone. But instead of going home, he decided, you know what, I'm going to go just knock on some doors and tell some people about Jesus. How many of you did that this week? That's what he did though. He went and he knocked on some doors, and it just so happened that he stumbled upon my papa's door. And that moment changed my papa's life and the course of my family history forever. He gave his life to Jesus. He did not rob a convenience store. And in fact, he got so into the whole following Jesus thing that after he married my grandmother, whom he met in church, they went off to Bible college in Missouri. And there are stories told of... They were really poor in even before Bible college, but really struggling to make it through this time in Bible college as a married couple. There's stories of my grandfather walking out of class to his house, grabbing the shotgun out of his house, throwing it over his shoulder, walking into the woods to hunt rabbits so they would have food to eat in Bible college. Now, this story about my grandfather is deeply, deeply formative for me. It shapes the way I view my place in the world, my sense of self. This is true of my other grandparents as well. His wife spent her whole life, over 50 years, in Christian education. My grandfather on my mom's side fought in World War II in the Battle of the Bulge. He worked for the railroad his whole life, a hardworking man. The day that he gave his life to Jesus, before that he drank a lot, he smoked a lot, but the day he met Jesus, he never touched it again. His wife, my grandmother, who I called my nanny, she started a special education program for kids way back in the day at Bible Baptist in Savannah, Georgia, and people from all over the city would bring their kids so they could have a place where they were welcomed and cared for at church, and there was a space for them. She also founded a crisis pregnancy center in Savannah that's responsible for saving lives. And these stories are like formative for me. They're our ancestors, for good or bad, for better or worse. Their stories give us our sense of self and our place in the world, our purpose. They contribute to our mental maps and our narrative about who we are. In the same way, the story that we're about to read, the story of Abram, who would one day be called Abraham, has been that for millions of people throughout history. These stories have been told all over the world for millennia and given people an anchor point as they think about who they are and their sense of self. Let me give you an example. In Luke chapter 1, 2,000 years after the time of Abraham, the angel Gabriel shows up and speaks to Mary and lets her know, hey, you are carrying the Messiah in your womb. And afterwards, she sings this song, and I'll read the beginning and the end for you. She says, my soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. That's pretty like normal, joyful response to having a child. But her next line is a little puzzling. It shows that she's paying attention to a bigger picture, a larger narrative. She says, from now on, all generations will call me blessed. That's not something we normally say at getting the exciting news of a birth. Then down in verse 54, he has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised our ancestors. So 2,000 years later, Mary has this moment where she finds out that she's with child, she's carrying the Messiah, and she connects it to the promises made to Abraham. Pretty fascinating stuff. In the New Testament, the religious leaders often call themselves what? Children of Abraham. This story is so vital to so many people throughout history. Abraham is referenced over 115 times in the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, not including the book of Genesis. So Abram is this figure that pops up over and over and over as people try to understand their place and their role in God's redemptive plan for humanity. But it's not just Mary, it's also Jesus. We think about Jesus. Jesus was taught this story of Abraham from a very early age. And from his teachings, we can tell that he believed that Abraham's leap of faith and his role in God's redemptive plan was very important. So let's give this story the attention and significance that it deserves this morning. Genesis chapter 12, I'm going to begin reading. The Lord had said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. Let's just take a moment and recognize what's being asked of Abraham here, okay, or Abram here. God is saying, I want you to leave everything you've ever known, the place you're from, your family, this place that you're familiar with, that you've belonged to, this place where you've gathered your wealth, like everything you know is here. All your success is rooted here. And I want you to pack up and leave. Now, for us today, that actually doesn't seem that scary because most of us have done that, right? Like, most of us at some point have packed up and moved across country or taken a big leap of faith like that. But for ancient peoples, they were not in quite, their culture was not as transient as ours. They couldn't just pick up and move out of hat. Unless you were fleeing oppression or you were part of a nomadic community, you were born in a place, you lived in that place, and you died in that place. Wendell Berry talks about how for all of human history, places have belonged to people, and we have belonged to places. That part of our world doesn't really exist anymore, at least not in the West. So God is asking Abram to leave this region of Babylon, which symbolically for us represents this malformed view of God, injustice, and a people given over to themselves and their own way of living. And here's the thing, there's no Zillow, right? No Zillow to like look up a new place. How many of you guys in here over 30, just for fun, spend time on Zillow? Yeah, you guys do that? Yeah, it's a sign you're getting old, right? Maybe it's Craigslist for you, just like looking for cool stuff on Craigslist. No Zillow, for Abraham. No job boards to just like send out applications everywhere and see what sticks. No like Facebook search to see what friends live out in Canaan, you know, none of that. Try selling that to your spouse. Honey, we're packing up the U-Haul and we're heading out. Where are we going? I don't know, but we're going. Not going to happen. If you tell your friends that you're leaving, you're moving that way, they're going to tell you that you're crazy. Your parents would think you were nuts. But that's what he did. That's what God is asking Abram to do. Verse 2. God not only asks him to do something, but there are promises attached to this invitation. God says, I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous. You will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on the earth will be blessed through you. So he's going to make Abram a great nation. Here's what that essentially means. You're going to have a really big family. And for a dude who was 75 years old and did not have any kids, it's kind of a compelling promise. Like, how are you going to do that, God? A big family. Blessing, right? It reminds me of Mary's song. All generations will now call me blessed. He's going to be famous. He's going to be well known. I can tell you that this promise was kept for sure. You know how I know that this promise was kept? One, we're talking about him. But two, across America right now, in Sunday school classrooms and children's churches everywhere, kids are singing Father Abraham. You guys know what I'm talking about. I wonder if God included that in the promise. Like, Abram, one day, kids in this place called America are going to be singing this song. They're going to say, Father Abraham had many sons. And then they're going to move one arm and two arms and then another leg. Just trust me, it's going to be awesome. You should do this. And all families on the earth will be blessed through you. We already saw where this thread connects at the birth of the Messiah, that all families on earth will be blessed through Abram's family if he would just take this leap of faith. So this is what God is asking. It's asking Abram to take a leap of faith, to leave everything that he had known for the great unknown. But he promises blessing and influence and a role in God's redemptive plan for all of humanity. And verse 4, so Abram departed as the Lord had instructed. He did it. Like, can we just take note of that? Like, he actually did this thing. He said, pack up the U-Haul and just go. I'll tell you when you get there. And Abram, for some reason, was like, okay, I'm going to do it. So he packs up all his wealth, all his camels, all his livestock. He takes his like whole household, and they head out into the great unknown with no destination. Pretty wild. Now, just like my grandparents were not perfect people, despite the things that I'm very proud that they did, they were not perfect people. Abraham was no saint. In fact, in the following chapters, as we're going to see in the coming weeks, Abram made some pretty foolish decisions. In fact, he probably even made one in verse 4 when he took Lot with him because God told him not to take any of his family. He regrets that really, really quickly. But that doesn't take away from Abraham's incredible leap of faith. So I've got three things that I want to highlight this morning, three things that are better with God than Babylon, where Abram is from. Number one, risk with God is better than the safety of Babylon. We are a people who are addicted to safety. I often feel addicted to safety, especially after becoming a parent. It's often the primary filter through which we sift all of our big life decisions. Alan Hirsch says that speaking of the church, preferences for stability and security blind us to the opportunities for adventure when they present themselves. If adventure isn't safe, we're really not that interested. Babylon, or the world, the world's way often promises safety, right? But the safety that Babylon offers often kills our soul and leads us to a life void of meaning and purpose. Nobody cares about the version of the Lord of the Rings where Frodo and Sam decide it's safer to stay in the Shire, and Sauron and his orcs eventually overrun the Middle Earth while two hobbits smoke on pipes and reminisce about their old friend Gandalf and what could have been, right? Nobody wants that story. Nobody wants to read about the Chronicles of Narnia where Lucy's too afraid to go back into the wardrobe and the kids just wait out World War II for a couple hours playing hide and seek in their mansion, right? Nobody is interested in that story. And nobody wants to read the story about Abraham who said, you know, those promises all sound great, God, but I've worked pretty hard and I probably should have retired years ago. I'm going to sell the RV and stay right here in good old Ur of the Chaldees in Babylon. Now, here's the thing. Most of us are not invited by God to carry a ring to the center of Mordor or to enter a wardrobe or to pack up our things and go across the world to be a missionary. But all of us, however, every single one of us are invited to play a role in God's redemptive plan for the universe, just like Abram. The truth is that most likely it's probably right where you already are. Your neighborhood, your school, your workplace, your soccer team, even your own home. But oftentimes, engaging with God's redemptive plan requires a level of risk, right? Willingness to be uncomfortable, if even for a moment. For many of us, though, as already was mentioned this morning, the activity that we're invited to is not always what feels like risk. We already know, some of us are like geared towards going an adventure. And we think packing up a U-Haul and heading out into the great unknown, that sounds awesome. Give me a video camera and I'll put it on YouTube, right? But prayer, stillness, quiet before God with no activity, listening to his voice, no thanks. For many of us, this life with the Spirit feels like the biggest risk. Raw emotion and desires, immaturity in your wounds, your failure and not knowing what to say exposed before God. For some of us, less activity and stillness is the risk that he is asking you to take. We've become a people who sometimes maybe don't fear the great unknown of the open road, but the unknown of silence in the presence of a God we don't understand. Perhaps the great journey Jesus is asking you to step out in faith towards is a decades-long journey of healing your soul. Are you willing to abandon the so-called safety of hiding and take to the open road with the Spirit? That is the question for each of us, whether it requires going and being active or listening and paying attention. The truth is that at some point, our preoccupation with safety gets in the way of our living full lives, the lives that God intended us to. Well, what about wisdom, Andrew? Isn't it wise to be safe? Well, if there's one thing I've learned over the years, it's that the safety of Babylon often masquerades itself as wisdom. And I'm not discounting wisdom. There are entire books of the Bible written to teach us wisdom. We must be wise. But the wisdom of Babylon is a careful mixture of half-truths and the lies of the serpent that keep us from full lives on the open road with the Spirit. And if we're honest, deep down, we know that everything worth having requires some level of risk. C.S. Lewis says this about love, which we all know is worth risk. To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. I'm not interested, and I don't want the church to be interested in being enslaved to the safety of Babylon. We should take our chances on the open road with Jesus. The second is the unknown with God is better than the predictability of Babylon. We love predictability. right? Love hearing like how, where our retirement funds are going to be when we hit like 65. Like, I love seeing that number. That's a great thing, right? I love the illusion of being able to plan out our successful lives and exactly how they're going to go. There is a level of predictability that comes with choosing safety and choosing to live a certain way that avoids the invitation of the open road. But let me be honest with you. Following Jesus, stepping out in faith, is extremely unpredictable. If you take the same heart posture as Abraham and say, I'm in to Jesus' invitations, I can honestly tell you that I have no idea where you will end up or what you will do or what your experiences will be. I have no idea. There is no way that when I was in college, first working towards being a nurse, then, then a physical therapist, and then multiple other things as I changed my path, that I ever could have predicted that I would have experienced the things that I've experienced over the last 12 years. Even the moment that I showed you earlier, the kids wearing the uniforms for the first time, I never could have predicted that. The highs and lows that ultimately make up full living. Maybe for some of us, it's not a physical place or an external miracle that the Father wants you to experience on the open road. But maybe what he wants to do that feels unpredictable is a work in your soul, a miracle of transformation that requires a step of faith. Are we willing to risk the unknown with God over the predictability of Babylon? I say, let's go. And finally, God's promises are better than Babylon's lies. This is one I've toiled with a lot over the last couple weeks. I'm a young man, right? I'm 38. Some of you are like, yeah, that's young. The teenager in here, I'm like, that's old, dude. Yeah, I get called unk a lot around here. I'm a young man, but truly, even though I'm young, I feel this sense of wearing down, of being tired of seeing people believe the lies of Babylon and watch it wreak havoc in their lives. I'm just tired of it. It's painful. Even this last week, I was in Florida and I was hanging out with my parents, and watching my parents mourn over some people that they know who are their age, who after 40 years of marriage, the lies that had been planted, that the enemy had planted decades and decades before, finally began to produce fruit and was creating all this pain in the lives of their children and ultimately led to their separation. So it's not like, I think a lot of times in the church, we look at like the younger generation and we're like, you know, I don't know. We just get really like legalistic and think we need, like, they're the ones who need to watch out for the lies, which is true. But the lies of Babylon, we all hear them, right? Like, there's part of me that when I hear the lies and I see the lies and the havoc and pain that it causes in the people I love, I want to fix it. But the reality is, I can't. All I can do is be aware that I'm hearing the same lies, right? Like, can we acknowledge for a minute that the lies of Babylon are everywhere? The lies of the world, the flesh, and the devil that want to destroy us and ruin us are everywhere. They run our culture. They run our world. I'll use social media as an example. Social media is like the beating dog these days of the lies of the world, and that's okay. It's an easy one. We literally scroll through these feeds where lies are subtly targeted at us to make us believe that we deserve something better, that we need something better, that there's more out there for us, that our spouse should look this way. We should make this money. I should make this money. I should be in this career. My life should look like this. And ultimately, these seeds lead to destruction. And we're really good at being like, yeah, social media is terrible for kids, right? It's terrible for teenagers. But we know it's bad for us too, right? Like, we know It shapes us, informs us in ways that are not helpful. And I'm really not trying to like beat us up over this stuff today, but I think we need warning, right? We need to be reminded that there is an enemy who does go about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. This is reality. And social media, the content that we put into our minds, forms us. And even if it doesn't make us make a decision immediately, it plants seeds. I feel like I'm sounding like my wild Appalachian grandfather of a preacher right now. But I can't help it. It's true. I'm tired of the pain. Here's what John Mark Comer says in his book, Live No Lies. We must move beyond Sunday services and a network of loose ties to become a robust counter-anti-culture, not just against the world, but for the world. Calling out the lies of the world is an act of love for the world. Because we're not just against evil, though we are, we're for good. We're for love, joy, thriving marriages and families, children brought up in loving delight, adults moving off the egocentric operating system to become people of love, true freedom, justice for all, and unity in diversity. Alan Hirsch says that unless the church is equipping believers to embrace the values and vision of the kingdom of God and turn away from the materialism, consumerism, greed, and power of the present age, it not only abandons its biblical mandate, but it is rendered ineffective. If we cannot call out the lies of the enemy, if we cannot point out the lies of Babylon, then we will be ruled by them. And we render ourselves incapable of producing the kind of healing and shalom and justice that we long to see in the world. We do not limit our ability to receive God's love because, as Cindy mentioned earlier, that's been taken care of. Our sin is paid for. But it does limit our ability to participate in God's redemptive plan for all of humanity. Hebrews chapter 11 is called the Hall of Faith. It's a famous chapter in the New Testament where all these people who lived by radical faith are mentioned and named for how they lived by faith. And this is what it says about Abraham and his great leap of faith in Hebrews 11, verse 8. It says, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking toward the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, his wife, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and countless as the sands on the seashore. Abraham's faith has been a marker for millennia for people who chose to also live in faith. Give you another example. I was recently in Florida, as I mentioned, and my family went through this really sort of like traumatic experience on our first 2 days in Florida. Don't be surprised; it's pretty normal for Florida. We're there, and we're at my parents' house, and my parents live on this little island off the coast, or right by Jacksonville, and we're there with our kids, and we've been there less than 24 hours, and long story short, their neighbor sort of snaps for no reason. I think there was some mental illness and some alcohol involved. But long story short, this neighbor is like literally trying to beat down our door, get inside the house, asking like these strange questions about the kids. It was like this really, really like scary, alarming moment. We're like putting the show on for our kids. I'm like, here's some ice cream with sprinkles. Like, ignore the angry neighbor. Long story short, we had to call the police a couple times, and eventually she got taken to jail. But we had to leave the house because she was going to get let out the next morning. We had to get this Airbnb. And so it was like this really like high adrenaline, high blood pressure, first 48 hours on the island. Yeah. But when we were in this little Airbnb with my parents, right, like everybody sort of like has this low-grade stress still from this environment. And everybody was in, I think Marianne was in bed, the kids were in bed. And it was just me and my parents out on the couch. And we started telling these stories of our family. It just like started happening. We started talking about my papa and some of these experiences that he went through. And we talked about my crazy uncle who's no longer with us, but could make anybody laugh at any time. And we were talking about all the jokes and the stupid things he did and just telling all these stories about like our family and where we come from. And I noticed that like as we were telling these stories, like the heart rate started to decrease a little bit, right? Like the blood pressure started to drop and the rush of adrenaline that was still in my body like started to subside, because these stories about where I came from and who I am that contributed to my sense of self like reaffirmed who I was and my place in the world, right? It reminded me that in a really intense moment, I know who I am. It's going to be okay. And that's what Abraham's story is meant to do for us in many ways. It reminds us who we are, that we are people of faith. And even when it's scary, even when the unknown is before us, we can take the step not knowing where it leads, because it's who we are. It's in our blood. I want to read a little bit of Hebrews 12 for you here too. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, that's Abram. That's where we come from. That's the tradition of faith that is thousands of years running from Abram through Jesus and now to us. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles us. That's our addiction to safety and predictability and the lies of Babylon. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Don't give up. Keep going. This cloud of witnesses that's highlighted by Abraham gives us the courage to be people of risk and faith. The reality is that confessing addiction and sin and the things that hold us back from God is scary. It's hard. It requires faith. Prayer, exposing our lives before God, life with the Spirit, requires faith and risk. It's not always comfortable. Choosing a life set apart for God's redemptive plan is not the norm, and it can feel a little scary. But because of Abraham, and because even more, Jesus, we can become people of risk and faith, setting us free to live a life on the open road with the Spirit. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for the story of this man, Abraham, who took this incredible leap of faith. And Lord, for many of us, for different reasons, we feel the need for faith right now. Maybe we're being called into the unknown. We don't know where our next step is going to land. And maybe by just the nature of our circumstances of our life and the broken world that's before us, we've been placed unwillingly in a season of not knowing. And Lord, it can be terrifying. It can feel so easy to hear the call to go back to Babylon, to stop trusting you and to do it our way or the world's way. God, we thank you for the truth of Jesus and the goodness of God revealed in the gospel, the faithful promises that you give us that are always kept, Lord. God, I pray for those of us in this room right now that we would abandon the lies of Babylon, the safety of Babylon, the predictability of Babylon, whatever that may be, for the wild open road with the Spirit. We love you, Jesus, in your name.
Thanks again for listening. Make sure to subscribe to get the weekly episodes in your podcast feed. You can find out more on how to get connected with Redemption Hill at redemptionboise.org/connection, where you can fill out the Connect card and start your journey today. For regular encouragement throughout the week, follow us on Instagram at Redemption Boise. We are so glad you're here and are excited to accompany you in your story with God. We hope to see you soon.